This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Rock stars, movie stars, authors. Hey, we're just having conversations. Arrow.net. ARROE.net. We are unplugged and totally uncut with Crispin Boyer.
There you are, you wild man with a writing instrument. What are you doing, buddy?
Sitting here with my writing instruments, I guess. How you doing?
Doing well. Hey, you got to be honest with me here when it comes to this particular book, because it's coming out at the absolute perfect time as we jump into a brand new school year. You know students are going to be taking this book to them, to school, on the buses and everything.
That would be great. Kids have so many different things competing for their attention. So, yeah, an actual physical book, that might be unusual. It's like a strange artifact. They'll be carrying around on the bus.
Do you think that Zeus plays a superhero to a lot of these kids in the way that especially coming out of the pandemic and stuff like that, they're looking for something that they can relate with, and a hamster is something that kids go over, and now you've got one like Zeus.
Well, let's see. Yeah, so Zeus is kind of a flawed hero, I guess, if you're comparing him to the Marvel characters. He's not so much a Captain America as more of, maybe a Tony Stark, a bit kind of full of himself. but at the same time, he is a little hamster. He's a little hamster, but he's got a the ego the size of, like a grizzly bear. He's a little bit of I'm throwing a lot of stuff out here, but he's kind of like Michael Scott from The Office. Like he thinks of his brain's bigger than his heart, and probably it's the other way around. His heart might be bigger than his brain.
So now when you came up with Zeus as that writer during the first book and everything like that, did you picture inside your mind, or did you cut out a picture of an actor or somebody and said, okay, this is who Zeus needs to be? And because, as a writer, I'll do that a lot of times with my characters so that I can sit there and I can talk about their expressions and how they act and react and things.
That's a good question. I know that whenever I first talked about the series with my editors, we envisioned, I guess the closest would be, it's like Pinky in the Brain, like kind of a character who isn't a bad character, but maybe they have ideas. They're good ideas. What they think are great ideas are really more self-serving and a little bit big, more than their ego is bigger than what their guts can cash, I guess. And that's why we have all these other characters in the series, like Athena, who's the goddess of wisdom, who's kind of really the brains of the operation. And then you've got Demeter, the grasshopper, who's kind of the angel on Zeus's shoulder, kind of his conscience. So there's all these moderating factors in Zeus's life. So it's really more of an ensemble, I guess.
So now, one of the things that you have mastered the art of, and you did this even in the first book and stuff like that, is that you create laughter that's out loud on your pages. Well, for a comedian, they have to sit there and go from club to club to club to craft their jokes. How is it that you're able to make us laugh through the power of word?
Oh, wow. Thank you. I think it's a lot of editing. I have a good editor. And it'll be, the first book went through, maybe 10 revisions, because that was really my first fiction book. But a lot of them, the first draft is just kind of there. It's just the scenes, the characters, it's what's going on. And then every time I revise a book, and most of these books get about 4 revisions, I'll just punch up. And, I guess unlike a comedian, I have the luxury of some time. Each book takes about a year, so I do get a lot of time to really sit there and craft and punch stuff up and see what works and what doesn't work. It's just, you know, if for me, I'm sitting here on my keyboard staring at the wall and tearing my hair off. So I'm glad that some of it's landing okay on the pages.
You know, one of the things that I've got to give you kudos to is the fact that you have been able to take a name like Zeus, because I would see that in school and I would run away from it because Greek mythology, what are you talking about? But the thing is, though, is that you have this way of drawing students to your books or young adult readers.
Well, thanks. I mean, that's the whole goal of the series, is to kind of sneak in some educational stuff amidst all those zany nightly adventures that these characters have and the encounters with monsters and quests for treasure and all of that stuff. And, you know, kids these days have so much pulling at their attention span that it's, you know, with this series, we also have a podcast that was kind of inspired by, you know, the animals in the series get their marching orders. They get their nightly adventures by listening to a podcast. And actually, the owner of the pet store listens to a podcast called Greeking Out. And then National Geographic decided to take that and turn it into a real-life podcast. So now, you know, kids can say, if they're driving around in the car and parents want to put on something, kids can listen, could put on, you know, play the podcast. So the fiction has inspired the, like, a real-life podcast that then kids can listen to. So they might learn about mythology from that, or they might go to the website ZeusAndMighty.com and play some games, or you know, read more about the characters, or read more about the different gods and history and the truth behind the fiction. So it's just about, you can't compete with everything really that's out there for kids' attention. So if you can't beat him, you might as well join him and throw as much at them as you can, you know?
Well, I love the fact that you are proving one of the greatest things today, and that is that a lot of people think that podcasting began with radio people, when in fact it was the writers who started podcasting. It's because they wanted to get their word out there. And so for you to say that you've got the podcast and stuff like that, once again, kudos to the writer, dude.
Yes, thank you. Let's celebrate the writers out there. I mean, that's really everything. Pretty much everything starts by someone staring at a screen and banging at the keyboard and staring at the wall. Well, and then hashing it out with editors and collaborating, and yeah.
You're so right about those editors and stuff like that. That's one of the reasons why so many books are still in boxes underneath people's beds or up in the attic, because they don't want to face the editors. So then how do you face the naysayers and stuff like that? I mean, I realize an editor's job is just to make you greater and stuff like that, and to have you, you know, to give you a stronger image in the public. But how do you personally, as a creative person, put up with the stress of the editing and them saying, "Now I need another rewrite"?
Been an editor myself, so I know like both sides of it, and I know how important the editor is. And whenever you write something and you stare at it for so long, at a certain point, you don't even know what you're looking at anymore. You can't really see the flaws. You can't see you're too close, too attached to it, and you need that the distant third set of eyes to really tell you what's wrong with it. And when you look back at great authors like J.K. Rowling and the Harry Potter books, you know, her first book was the one that was the most heavily edited, and it was really one of the tightest books of the series. So it just shows how important an editor can be, and you just can't, as a writer, you just can't have a thin skin when it comes to that kind of thing, and you should really welcome it. And you know, part of the stress too is there's another person that looks at my book. She's a professor of Greek history, so she goes through and reads the stories and makes sure that there is actual educational mythological facts in the story. And for me, that's even more stressful. It's almost like getting your term paper graded, and that might be by the time I'm at the third or fourth draft, whenever she sees it, and I'm pretty invested in the story, so I'm always sweating, like, oh gosh, what if this isn't staying within the guardrails of the mythology and I have to change everything? But so far she's been nothing but like helpful, and has suggested other characters and tweaks and twists that actually made the story better.
I got to tell you that the editor is, I found out the hard way how important an editor is on my second book, because I wanted my voice to be heard in these pages and not necessarily the editor's. And so the editor then comes back and says, look, I'll edit the book or I'll walk away. But if I edit the book, I'm spelling my name backwards. I don't want people to know that I edited your book.
Oh.
So, and it's only because I became addicted to what Mark Twain said, and that all authors should, you know, keep their voices. And I think what's really interesting, Crispin, is that you have kept your voice in this. And that's what I love about, as an adult, I read your books and I'm getting something out of it, dude. You make me feel like it's like, all right, what's the next one?
Oh, that's awesome. Well, thanks for saying that. And I know what you mean too about maintaining your voice, because that is your signature on the painting. You know, that's your thread that goes through it. It's your own personal connection to the story, and also, you know, to the readers. Though, you know, they like certain authors for their voice, and it's rewarding to then hear that people like it. Or, you know, I'm just happy if the story makes sense, to be honest. But then, and then, you know, we have an illustrator too, Andy Elkerton, who does a great job. Yes. Illustrating everything. And so I'll turn the stuff over to him by like the third draft, and then he will illustrate the scenes from Zeus's world. And it's tricky because it's set in a pet rescue center, but then these animals all think they're in ancient Greece. So when they look at, like, you know, the aquariums, they see the ocean. When they look at the shells, they see mountains. So Andy then has to illustrate it in a way that captures both sides of that shows these features of ancient Greece and these monsters, but then at the same time you can kind of tell what they really are in real life. And then he'll draw something that's better than what I wrote, and then I'll go back and tweak it based on his illustration. So in that way it's really a cool collaboration.
So this is a 7-book series. This is number 3 out of the 7. Are you sitting by a storyboard 24/7 to kind of put this, or do you know exactly where you're growing with this?
I have a pretty good idea. We've settled on the myths that we want for each of the stories, and it's kind of building up. I've actually written the next two are already pretty much done. I'm
wow.
still working on the fifth book, but the next book comes out next year. And the idea is for each book to tackle a different myth. The first one was the Jason and the Argonauts.
Yep.
And the Golden Fleece. The second one was the Minotaur. This one about the challenges, basically the labors of Hercules that the animals have to go through and complete. So they fight the Hydra, they go and meet the Amazons, and then, you know, you've got to think about what we haven't visited yet. So there's the Underworld, and there's the Odyssey, and there's the Trojan War. So those are the big myths that we want to hit as the series moves forward.
Well, I look forward to talking to you many more times in the future, Mr. Crispin.
Me too, thank you.
You bet. You come back to this show anytime, all right, Guy?
Thanks, I will. I really enjoy being on your show, thank you.
You bet. Be brilliant today.
Thank you.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.